Hi.
This is so exciting. This is for the girls podcast.
For the girls podcast. I'm Nick Westrate.
And I'm Nick Westrate.
Yes, and we are both the same person, and we run a podcast. We host a podcast about gays and their divas, queers and their divas,
ladies and their divas,
dykes and their divas,
divas
and their divas,
and their divas.
We're here for divas who call their album Diva. And we're here tonight with Spindle A. Webb, who is an artist and a hairdresser in Los Angeles. Hi, Spindle.
Hello.
We always try to, like, slip in the intro, like, who we're doing. We think we're being so smart, but it's, like, so obvious. But go ahead. Who are you doing, Spindle? Who's your diva?
I'm going to be talking about Annie Lennox tonight.
Oh, yes. And we are doing it at night. Yes. Actually, is it just turned into night, didn't it? How pretty.
Beautiful night in Los Angeles.
I think that's good for Annie, right?
Night is dark as pitch.
You were saying that, like, you were just saying right before you were taping that, because we were talking about our diva, and I think, like, people know Bette Midler for her ballads, and we get a little sensitive to that, because we're like, you don't know. She has, like, a way more funky, eclectic, there's whole rock sides to her.
Yeah.
And you kind of have that with Annie, too.
The
like
Rose.
Like, the Rose?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you were saying that kind of about Annie, too. Like, people can maybe know Annie for, like,
Sweet Dreams and Here Comes the Rain Again.
Do you like Here Comes the Rain Again?
It's everybody knows Eurythmics for those songs and, you know, Why by Annie Lennox, which is an incredible song, but I really delve more into her darker stuff, and you can, if you listen to a full album, you can hear that darker stuff. It's just, nobody really brings all that up. You know, people, you say, oh, I love the Eurythmics. They say, oh, yeah, I love Sweet Dreams. I'm like, yeah, everybody loves that song.
You know who loves that song? Every Light FM station. There is no, and I know because that's all I listen to in the car.
And K-Earth 101. Now I feel extra old because now it's a moldy oldie.
Yeah, but like you can't turn on the car and listen to those stations without having that song come on. And I never skip, so it still
neither
hits.
Sweet dreams are made of these.
But you like her darker, less known stuff.
I do. I was in Massachusetts for about a year, and it was kind of my first introduction to MTV. And
was this with your family?
Yes, my dad was transferred to Concord, Massachusetts. He worked for Wang. We lived in Wang Computers.
Okay.
I don't even know if they're still around, but, you know, this is like the age of blooming technology, 1982. And we transferred there. I grew up in Bermuda, and we transferred to Massachusetts and introduced to MTV. We had no cable. We had two channels in Bermuda, ABC and CBS. In Bermuda was ZBM and ZFB. No cable. And I was watching MTV, and I was so into Boy George at the time. When I first heard Culture Club, I was like, oh my God, you know, this effeminate man, I knew I was gay, and I was sitting with a bunch of friends from school, and Sweet Dreams came on, and I was like, what? Boy Who? What the fuck?
We came on MTV?
Yeah, it was on MTV, mm-hmm. And I was just enamored by this woman. It's, you know, a woman in a suit, crop cut, gorgeous. And the guys with me were like, oh, well, she would be pretty if she had longer hair. And I'm like, fuck you.
Really? Did they say that?
Yep. Somebody said that. I was like, wow.
I feel like Annie would also say, fuck you.
Yeah, it's like, come on. This stereotypical pretty woman in the 80s. But she rocked it with confidence, and she owned it. And so I was like, oh, my God, this is it. So, you know, every time, you know, we had, I don't remember the radio station, but
that's a dark song though, right? If you're talking about, that is a dark song, no?
It is a dark song. I mean, you know, it's about, you know, being abused and questioning yourself and, but ultimately traveling the world. And what was great about the song was, even though it was repetitive, it was still catchy. The lyrics and the music was repetitive, but it still inspired. Then came Love is a Stranger, and that was the deal breaker for me. She was being androgynous. She was, you know, she was basically doing drag king in 1982. And not only that, she was very sultry.
Are you talking about the video?
The video.
What is the video? Yes. What is she
so
doing?
The video is, you know, it's about this kind of seductive, rich woman driving around in a Rolls Royce. And then she gets out of the car and, you know, Dave Stewart's watching her through a computer monitor. And, you know, she switches identities throughout the whole video. But at the end, she takes off her wig and she becomes a man. And it ends her just kind of like being very, like kind of like an android in her movement. And she's got no makeup on, her hair slicked back, she's wearing a suit. So it's like she just basically was... One of the things about Annie Lennox has always been she thrived on being a woman, being a man, being a woman, being a man. So it's
That's not confusing.
No, not at all.
Being an alien, being a cyborg, being an imaginary creature.
And then
creature.
At the end of the video, you know, she moves around like a robot, and you're just kind of like, okay, well, is this actually a human?
This is a good song. This is a bop.
It's an amazing song, and it doesn't get as played as much as Sweet Dreams, and it's a
big change. Honestly, nothing gets as played as much as Sweet Dreams. Like, classic and current still.
Yes.
It still works. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I feel like I could trick someone into being like, slip this in, and it is some of its time period, but I could trick someone into being like, this is now. This is still
timeless,
cool yeah. Now.
It's pretty timeless.
I
want to be like this person in this video.
She's right?
That's she's never not been cool.
No, I mean, what I loved about her was, because, you know, I was kind of a solo child. I was a nerd. I mean, when I was in school at that time in Massachusetts, even the nerds picked on me. That's how nerdy I was. And, you know, one of the reasons why I related to Culture Club, they did that song, Do You Really Want to Hurt Me? And it affected me in a big time, and it made me sad. But then when I found the Eurythmics, it made me feel a little bit more empowered and stronger, because it was kind of more of a, I'm a gonna fucking kick your ass because I'm a strong, dominant person. And for a woman in that era, because, you know, the music scene is a man's world. Mm-hmm. And for her to come out with that song looking like a man or being androgynous, it was a big deal. And because I grew up in Bermuda, I was 10 years behind. I didn't have a lot of media. The music radios would play the top 20s, so I didn't know about Grace Jones yet. And MTV didn't play Grace Jones while I was there, so Annie Lennox was my first introduction to that whole...
that world?
Yes. You know, women being androgynous in a manly way, but still be feminine as well.
So that, like, spoke to your sexuality. That spoke to your gender.
It did.
And your identity, an identity that could... I always think about when you see something, you're like, oh, I didn't know that possibility existed.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, like, you know, we're brought up a lot of times to be very rigid in our representations and our understanding.
Right. When I was, you know, 7th grade, I was always into very strong women characters. I mean, for crying out loud, I was in 7th grade, and all the boys would be like, I'm Batman, Superman, blah, blah, blah. And I'd run out and sing, Wonder Woman! And, you know, living on a small island, that's the worst thing you can do, because it followed me all the way through high school.
Everyone.
I got teased for it all the time. And then I saw Superman 2, and Ursa, who's the female villain in that, I was like, oh my god, that's my mother right there, walking in her thigh highs. And I used to, when my mom and dad used to go to work, I was always home alone a lot. I would slip on my mom's go-go boots and wear my navy blue pajamas and pretend to be Ursa.
And you felt powerful. I was always in the X-Men, Jean Grey and Storm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, like, I was like, oh, just didn't even think about it. Like, that's just where I looked towards for power and inspiration. Like,
exactly.
I did not like the guys. They were so boring.
No, I've never really been into male singers. I mean, to this day. And what's funny is some of the male singers that I do like sound like women. You know, there's a band, IMX, and he sings this song, You Give It to Me. And when I first heard it, it sounded almost just like Annie Lennox. It tripped me out. And when my husband told me, oh, it's a guy, I'm like, get the fuck out of here. So, you know, when I first saw her...
in Massachusetts, is that your senior year then? Or would you graduate?
No. Freshman.
Freshman in...
in Massachusetts.
Okay.
I was 12.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Wow. So this was, like, coming right where it needs to hit you
and then
move
when,
you through this.
And then
this
when she came
time.
Along, you know, Wonder Woman, Ursa, and then freaking Annie Lennox, I was like, oh, God.
The Trinity. The Trinity is going to protect you.
Yes, the unholy Trinity.
Fun Trinity. To show you that your identity is fungible.
Yeah, and, you know, I related to them because, you know, they're strong women, and they stand on their own, and they do their own thing, and they're powerful. You know, it was all about the power, and, you know, in that era, in the 70s and 80s, to be a powerful woman, it was a struggle. And she emulated that through her music and her videos.
Where'd you go from after that? After you're like, okay, I need to know more about this person. I need more of this person in my life. Who'd you turn to? What'd you turn to? What'd you do?
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, after finding Eurythmics in Massachusetts, I went back to Bermuda.
Oh, really?
And, excuse me.
Were you excited to do that?
When I, you know, so preteens, I was all about Bermuda. It was a beautiful tropical island, and, you know, it was definitely a surreal experience. And then going to Massachusetts for a year, it opened my eyes about how closed it was. It's very conservative. It's very small. You can drive from one end of the island to 45 minutes to an hour, and everybody knows everybody, and, you know, if you have a secret, you better keep it locked up tighter than Fort Knox, because everybody will know about it. So when I went back, not a lot of people knew about the music that was going on in the U.S. or even in Europe.
Hmm.
And while I was in Massachusetts, I'm jumping back and forth, I'm sorry, but when I was in Massachusetts and I, you know, I heard Sweet Dreams, Love is a Stranger, then Here Comes the Rain Again came out, and then Who's That Girl?
What a, like, lot of hits right there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
right out of the gate.
Yeah, and I did something that, you know, most people never do. I just went out and bought those two albums, thinking Sweet Dreams and Touch was their first two albums, and I would just sit in the living room listening to them
on
all
record
day, on vinyl. Yeah, my mom and dad would not allow me to use their Wi-Fi or hi-fi.
What's that?
Hi-fi, the old school stereo system is called hi-fi in the 70s and 80s,
and they wouldn't let me,
but I would figure it out. And while they were at work and left me alone in the house, I would figure it out and play them all day.
Is it basic to say Here Comes the Rain Again is not just one of my favorite Annie songs, but one of my favorite songs of all time?
It's an incredible song.
It's one of the most sexy... The idea of, like, being with someone and just being like, talk to me like lovers do.
Yeah. And
like, asking someone on a first date just to, like, pretend. Like, I'm obsessed with you, and so let's pretend, and maybe by pretending we can...
And it's very haunting, too.
And haunting.
You know, because it's like she's reaching out to somebody to love her, but that person doesn't want to love her in return.
But she also wants an obsessive love, right? She wants it to be raining with this. She wants to know, is it going to be raining with you?
And she wants to know if it's going to be eternal. I don't know. It's just, you know,
it's deep,
but you know, it's a great song. But then, you know, you dive deeper into that album, you have songs like Aqua, where she sings, "Don't touch me, don't talk to me about it, and I don't feel anything." It's like,
should we play that?
It's a great song. And what I love about it is that's kind of where it introduced me to a little bit more of a tribal beat, because it has kind of a tribal beat.
Love to tell people to get the fuck away from me.
Well, the voice right there is just like, it, you know, when she sings the chorus, it's like, don't fuck with me. And then she almost sounds a little submissive in her verses. Like, she's sad. But then she, like, says, just get away from me. Don't talk to me about it. And that's what I loved about that song. And that's, songs like that are what really...
What
connected me to her, you know, because I was a loner, and sorry, Dad, you're awesome, but my mom and I did not connect at all. And I kind of was pretty much on my own, and I had...
Did you have siblings?
Well, I have a sister 10 years old, younger than I.
Okay, so you weren't close to her.
No, she's my little flower. I love her with all my heart, and we're still super tight. But, you know, having a sister 10 years younger, you know, there isn't that connection. And what was funny, when I was back in Bermuda, you know, I had Sweet Dreams and I had Touch, and everybody, you know, in Bermuda, there's really only two groups: people that listen to reggae and people that listen to pop music. The people that listen to pop music were all into Duran Duran. And they're like, oh, yeah, Eurythmics is cool, but, you know, they listen to the basics. But I'm like,
look, it gets deeper.
Yeah, it gets deeper. Her albums get deeper. And
also, when you start being a fan, I feel like you, like for us, we really feel like we spend that time with them. That mm-hmm. you know, like people just do the surface on, like they play the music. You're not just playing the music just to play while you're doing other stuff. You're playing to really get in
right
to it.
Right. It
understand it.
It to understand it. And you know, I'm an artist, so you know, I drew a lot when I was a kid. And
was that like an escape?
It was a total escape. I will say one of the great things about my mom was that if it was a really nice day and I was sitting in the living room watching cartoons as a kid, she would flip off the TV and say, get out of here, you're going to go do something productive. And that's where I would start drawing and painting and whatever. And I would listen to the Eurythmics and I'd be drawing her, and I would listen to songs and I would come up with ideas of how the music video would look. Wow. And come up with these stories. And
you were living a total fantasy.
It put me in a complete fantasy world. It took me away from reality, and that's what I needed.
This saves you.
It saved me, yeah.
Because you're on an island that you didn't relate to anyone.
Right, and I was bullied a lot, and you know, people knew I was gay before I...
Were you dressing like different than the kind of...
I was, but you know, I didn't really have a specific identity. I just knew I liked red and black.
Red and black, the yeah. colors?
Yeah.
That's the color. You wanted to wear red
and I wanted to wear red and black. That's all I wanted to wear.
And you don't know why. Where did that come from?
I just liked red and black as a combination.
It's a classic combination. You can't fight that. So.
You know, and you know, everybody was wearing khakis and Calypso shirts. And, you know, in Bermuda, every school has uniforms, so you know, it's summer you wear khakis and calypso, and winter you wear blazers and a tie with gray shorts or pants.
I'm kind of into that now, but back then it was a social thing. Like it kind of showed where how vanilla you were.
Or well, it wasn't really social; it was more military.
A military thing.
Because you had to wear a uniform. You
know, I had to wear a uniform in
and
school too.
And it had to be clean. If the shirt was wrinkled, you'd get shit. If the pants were too short, you'd get shit. Mm-hmm. So you know, it was my release.
What was the song that you remember detailing the music video of?
Well, it wasn't. This song, I mean, I imagined her, like, kind of, like, underwater and singing, but there's a song called Regrets, and at the time, I just saw Paranomia by Art of Noise, where everything was very abstract with floating lips. But the one song that really got me was Painter Rumor. It's kind of a long song, but that's the song that really got me, because it's got very Middle Eastern sounding to it in the keyboards. And then at some point in the song, which is what I've always loved about Annie Lennox, because I told you it during Love is a Stranger, she kind of turned into like a robot. Well, her voice becomes very animatronic. It's like she sounds like a robot. And that song sparked a story, and I created a story on this song. Like, it's very Egyptian sounding, and I was like, I got lost in that song. So
should we play it?
I created a character out of it, and her name, she's an android, and her name is Peral. Painter Rumor, Annie Lennox.
Now, are you talking about now I know what you showed me before.
Showed you before this that I created a graphic novel based on this story.
But this story that you had since you were a teen?
Since I was...
That is so...
So this has been in your imagination.
Special!
Percolating, and yes. You find, and when did you... You recently made this comic book,
I made this comic book about, what, 4 years ago?
2014.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow, so you, it kind of came... It finally came to bloom.
It's been in bloom for years. I just finally had the chance to make it down. Happen.
So yeah. Have you been like doodling Perel and like putting it?
I've been drawing this android since I was 15 years old.
Wow.
I've done sketches here and there up to date.
And was this android when you started drawing her or it or they when you were 15, mm-hmm. what do you think she was protecting? Was she protecting you? What was she doing? What would make you go to it?
It wasn't really anything to do with me. It was more like creating a story based on this story, based on this song. What I got from the song was this android that just kind of traveled back in time, and she had a tub that she would lay in and would create a fake skin on her, and she ended up ruling over Egypt. It's kind of a silly story, but throughout the years it's evolved. And it's evolved to where this mastermind kid creates androids for this futuristic city, and she's one of them, but she's kind of a failed project, and she's really ditzy and cute. And she goes in and tinkers with some of his tools, and she explodes, and there's this android cat that he's created, and he took all of her parts and rebuilt her, but when she came back really nasty.
And bad nasty?
Nasty.
Or like gross nasty.
No, like evil. Evil nasty. I'm all about evil witches and bitches.
So is your husband, I hear. And now we've set the imagery to the song too, so.
Yes.
Come on. Oh, we call her come on, Battle Angels. Listen to this. Do y'all see Battle Angels? Alita Battle Angels?
I haven't seen that yet.
Don't see it, but that's what our fans are called.
Yeah.
It's like a one joke we had like several episodes ago, and now we legit call them Battle Angels. Doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But we love it. Angel rumor. I could tell you something. I could tell you something. It's a secret. It's a secret. It's a secret.
It kind of drew me to the whole android thing was because of the fact that she's a very like mechanical person in her movements. Even in her live music, she's very mechanical, the way she moves. But then, you know, the whole R2-D2 sound in there was like, that's when it struck me, oh my god, this sounds like a song about a freaking android. Mm. And
That's what sparked this.
Yeah. And then I just drew that character and she came to life.
So you graduated on the island?
Well,
from high school?
I didn't. I wouldn't say I graduated, but
because you didn't.
I did not graduate. No,
sometimes we say we don't do it. That means no, we didn't did do not. It. I can pick up what you're throwing down.
I did not graduate. My parents actually pulled me. I was going to Catholic school, and like almost every kid that is not into academics, I had ADD, which means I'm not interested in math or biology. But I love art. They pulled me out. And the first moment I started speaking for myself, that's when my parents said, you're joining the Navy.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Ooh, this is a surprise.
Yeah. Twist. Yeah. Plot twist. Twist. So you joined the Navy?
So what happened was, it was New Year's Eve, and my parents said, okay, yeah, you can go to the New Year's Eve party. And the day of, something came up, and I got accused of doing it, even though I didn't. They said, you're grounded. You're going to stay here and babysit your sister. And I was like, fuck that. And my sister said, you know what? Mind you, she's 10 years younger than I am. She's probably around 6 years old. And she said, just go to the party. I'll go down to where they are. My mom and dad were at this fancy soiree thrown by my Aunt Shirley. and, you know, her cuisine was KFC. Mm. And my sister ran down there in her onesie.
Oh, no.
And I ran off in my moped and went to the party, and the next day they came, they said, come here. And they said, either you're going to move in with your grandmother in California or you're going to join the Navy. And so I called my grandmother. She said no. So I was sent off to the Navy.
Whoa.
And this kind of brings up a really funny story. So I was in boot camp, and I did this all the time, and I'm amazed I didn't get my ass kicked, but I would walk around boot camp handing out laundry, singing I Need a Man by the Eurythmics.
Oh, no.
No, you wouldn't.
Yes, queen.
I sure would. And I was doing it in full voice. I was not going, I was like, I need a man. Sung by a woman. I'm like, so what? I fucking love this song. I'm gonna sing it.
Yeah, it's a song. I can sing it, can't I?
Yeah. And you know, this has been.
And also, I need a man.
Yeah, you know, when I while I was in Bermuda.
Did anyone say yes?
Well, see, when I was.
Do you get asked that question all the time? Like, how much dicks did you suck in the Navy?
Well, when I and my answer was I didn't because I was so afraid to come out.
Right.
Because you know, when you're in the military, you're surrounded by a bunch of homophobic people, and you know, this was in the late 80s, where it was before Don't Ask, Don't Tell,
right,
and
this was just in the don't period.
And it's like, you know, I'm in the shower and I'm like, oh god, I better not look at that big ass dick, you know, it's gonna be too obvious. But you know, this was when Savage came out, you know, that was after Revenge and Be Yourself Tonight, which I loved those albums, they were great. Be Yourself Tonight was very kind of like soul bluesy sounding, and then Revenge came out, and I was like,
And this, wait, are these all coming out while you're in the Navy?
No, this came out before. This was while I was still in Bermuda. I'm sorry,
that's okay.
Kind of going back and forth. That's why I was nervous about this, but
no, you're doing a beautiful job.
And then Savage came out, and I felt like the Eurythmics were getting back to their old electronic roots sound, because Be Yourself Tonight and Revenge was very rock sounding.
Did you like that?
Well, there were a lot of tracks on Revenge that I really hated, but when Missionary Man video came out, I was like, get the fuck out of here.
That's one of their leads, right?
She was in like a full-on leather bodysuit. Her hair was platinum, and it was kind of around the same time that Peter Gabriel did Big Time, where everything was kind of like stop-motion looking.
Mm-hmm.
And she came out in that bodysuit, and it was, again, very animatronic, like every movement was just kind of like skipping back and forth. She looked like a robot again, and that's what I loved about that song, and it's probably my favorite song from that album.
Well, I was born an original sinner. I was born from original sin, and if I had a dollar bill for all the things I've done, there'd be a mountain of money pile up to my chin.
Hey!
be true to yourself and it can go wrong. But there's just one thing that you must understand. You can fool with your brother, but don't mess with a missionary man. 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 Oh, the missionary.
And then after that, they released Savage, where she did Beethoven, and again did the whole woman looking like a man looking like a woman, and totally put on full drag. I mean, she looked like a full-on drag queen in that video.
Is that with the big blonde hair?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And then you were just like,
I was like, get the fuck out of here. Like, she had some crazy little girl skipping around messing up the apartment after she'd clean it. And there's like this looming drag queen in the background. And then she would go in her room and rip off her wig and come out with this psychotic persona, like Marilyn Monroe looking woman. And what was crazy about that album was that they released a video version of every song on that album.
Really?
Made, yes.
Wow.
So it's like a story.
Yeah, the whole album was relaying a story. It started off that she was just this crazy housewife and ended up falling in love with a new man and feeling settled.
And your favorite song was?
Well, I do love Beethoven, but one of my favorite songs off that album was probably Savage.
I don't know that song. Should we listen
See?
To it?
See? That's why I'm introducing
That's
this
why
to
we're here. Y'all are teaching us. So we're going up to the desert, so we're going to really, like,
Savage is a great song, and Heaven, which is just an instrumental where she just says, Heaven, I love to, is also really good. But Savage is...
Hands of power are killing me while the sun displays its teeth. Oh, mockery is laughing, all violence is cheap. She said, these are my guns, these are my furs, this is my living room. You can play with me there sometimes, if you catch me. I have this unhappiness to wear around my neck. It's a pretty piece of jewelry to show what I protect. She said, everything is fiction. All
she really loves drag.
Yes.
I love this line where she says in the song, everything is fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, I mean, all these personas, but it is all drag with her.
Yeah. I mean, it's every, you know, I mean, she, when she did Who's That Girl, the video, she did drag queen. His name is Earl. And I remember she did a Grammy Award show, and I was probably still in Massachusetts, and she came on singing Sweet Dreams dressed as Earl, and I didn't believe it was her. I was like, who's this fucking guy dressed up as a man? Who's this guy singing Annie Lennox? And then I saw that video, and like, get the hell out of here. But she's all, and I think that's why our community relates to her so much is because of that.
Mm. Also the fluidity and playing of gender. I mean, yeah. It's like she never was really done this way. Never really has. It hasn't been embraced.
Right.
The way that she's constantly flipping the identities and also playing with, like, not only is it all a drag, but underneath we're all just robots.
Right, yeah. And,
putting on we were talking about this earlier, too, like, her antipathy towards fame. And it makes me think that, you know, there are all these personas she would use to tell stories, and mm-hmm. she is a storyteller, and she wants to tell stories, but she does not want to give away Annie like herself. She wants to be able to put on a persona and put on a music or put on a song and tell you a story, but she really seems to hate fame and showing
her life. And you know, in her, especially in her earlier years, she said, I'm not in this for the awards. I'm not in this to be famous. I'm in this for the art. You know, I'm in this because this is my passion. But, you know, one of the things about, again, I'll bring up Savage, is it starts off that way, but then it ends with her being Annie and accepting herself as who she is. Because, you know, I think everybody goes through different moments or personalities in their mind where they don't know how to identify themselves or they don't know who they are or whatever. We all go through those phases, you know, we're just like, who am I? And it's a long road to get there, and I think that's kind of what she does in her music, too.
How'd you get out of the Navy?
Oh!
Not by singing Annie Lennox. Sorry. They're like, good try, Fairy. Keep on singing, you want a man. You're staying. Oh, my
God. That's like... I'm going to make a long story short. I went AWOL, Mischief Movement, AWOL from Restriction, which is... And then I was put in the brig, and then I told them I was gay.
And they were like, okay, fine. Yeah, you're gone.
And what was crazy, I didn't get dishonorable discharge, which I should have. I've got other than honorable, which is almost equivalent to medical discharge.
Wow.
But I just, you know, I think they knew I was not Navy material. So I was assigned to a pre-com unit, which is a ship on dry dock. It's a new ship. And I really wanted to be a lithographer, which is a land-based rate. And this ship obviously did not have it because it's not land-based. And so I was stuck on there as a seaman. And they would do damage control drills. It's basically pretend the ship is on fire and we're at war. And I would freak my shit and I would actually hide. And I got in a lot of trouble for that. And so I went AWOL, Mischief Movement, got discharged. Went back to Bermuda for like probably about a year before I went to Vermont. And I was watching the news for some reason.
In Vermont?
In Bermuda. And this is when the Gulf War broke out. And they listed all the commands that were there, and one of them was my ship. And I just did a heavy brow swipe and like, thank the fuck God I got out in time. I would have been in the Gulf War.
Whoa.
And, you know,
you probably know that during the Gulf War, this is very interesting, that Midler had a song called From a Distance.
That helped that ended the Gulf War.
I won that one.
She ended it. Yeah. I think we've already brought her up like four times.
Oh, we did?
Yeah.
You know what? You
can bring shit, her I lost. I thought times. I was really fucking killing it with that Gulf War.
Did she and Annie ever duet?
No.
I bet they're friends.
You know
though.
Who I. My dream duet is Annie.
And Grace Jones.
I can't believe they haven't done that.
Spindle is wearing a really fierce Grace Jones t-shirt right now.
That's crazy they haven't done that, isn't it?
Well, I think Grace Jones did that autobiography, and she said in that autobiography that she felt Annie Lennox ripped her off. I can kind of see that, but also Annie Lennox did it her way too. I mean, they were both very strong androgynous women. And Grace Jones is like my idol too, but I felt like Grace Jones could have said something a little different, like, this is awesome that this woman is emulating this as much as I am. And it would have been so rad, because, you know, you listen to Grace Jones and you listen to Annie Lennox, and they're so freaking similar. Their lyrics.
Really?
Their, yeah, you know.
Their ideas.
Very, you know, I don't need this man to make me feel like a woman kind of thing. And you're a man going to fuck me over? Fuck you. I think now they're on totally two different paths. You know, Annie Lennox is more of an activist, which is freaking awesome. But Grace Jones is still Grace Jones. And at 70, she's fantastic.
Still killing it.
Yes. Still killing it.
So you moved to Vermont? Was that your freedom? Was that the freedom times?
Vermont? No.
No?
No, not yet.
When was that?
That was my grandmother and my uncle hit me up and said, hey, you want to move back to L.A.? And so 91 was when I came back to L.A. And that's when there are no boundaries. I went to West Hollywood. I found my first goth club. And all bets were off. I was gay, and I was, like, able to be myself.
And then you got... Then it was 1 year later when you got the gift of Annie striking out solo. If that wasn't...
Oh, my God. Yeah, because they broke up, and it was a bittersweet thing because, you know, I wasn't a really big fan of their last two albums. Now I can listen to it and enjoy them. You know, it's, you know, just kind of a memory thing, but... But then she came out with her solo, and it was a completely different sound, and it was still Annie. And that video, I was just like...
What video?
For Why. Mm. I'm a Cancer, so I cry at the drop of a hat. And I was just like...
The nation cried when that video came, yeah. When that video and song came
out. It was so beautiful. And, you know, I got the album, and... It had Annie's soul, but it sounded nothing like the Eurythmics.
Mm-hmm. Are you cool with that?
I was totally cool with it. I love it when musicians go out and do their own thing as outside of the band and create a sound that's their own. I actually embrace it. Because if somebody goes out solo and tries to sound like the band they were in, I'm like, okay, you're tired, bitch.
Stop. Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
Stop.
And I know Annie's talked about that. She talked about how she was like, she did everything with her partner.
Yeah.
Dave Stewart. She was writing everything by herself.
Yeah.
So I saw this interview with her where she talked about how, you know, Dave was kind of the funny man and she was kind of the no person.
She was very serious about her shit.
Yeah. And so then she was like, and then I had to be the funny person and the serious person.
Yeah.
I had to be the front and the back. And I do think, you know, because I agree, she did that. And then she took a little bit of time to do the next one.
But there is great humor on Diva as an album.
No,
she
totally
has terrific humor.
Yeah. And it was another album where not all of the songs, but most of the songs she did videos for, just like she did with Savage. Mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of like a story she was telling.
I just watched that one where she's in that the full get up and hug, having everyone come and give her hugs.
Gifted. The gift.
And I started talking about
that
it.
Song.
And it's so sweet.
And you know what? When she did that video, nobody knew who she was. She was just kind of masked, and people just went up and gave her a hug. Nobody knew it was Annie Lennox.
She talks about like that. She's like, this is really a representation of the kind of fame that I feel. Like standing there, not moving, and people just coming up and smiling and taking pictures with you.
Yeah.
This is that kind of strange disconnection, and like wearing this great outfit, and she's just looking iconic and...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, do you know, I just actually, this is like a Wikipedia blurb, but I just read that that headdress is from Octopussy.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh, they found it in London.
No
and it's
way.
From a James Bond movie.
Now I have to watch that movie.
Isn't that funny?
That's awesome.
Isn't that awesome? Cool. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, what's your favorite song on that album?
Primitive.
Primitive is so good.
Yeah.
The gay community just ate that album up, didn't they? That was like the own thing.
It was kind
is
of
that one
everywhere.
Of the, it's called Diva.
Yeah.
I like this podcast.
I think that's one of the reasons why, but you know, I think it was kind of revolutionary for her because it was her first solo album and it did so well and it connected with so many people, including the gay community.
Were you, like, going to the clubs and hearing them play? I always said, like, the drag queens embraced those songs.
I actually have a really great story about that. I was at Rage, and mind you, I don't do drag. Rage is, of course, a gay club in the epicenter of West Hollywood.
Is it still around?
It's still around.
Is it?
Yep. And I used to go... I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. Now, I hate West Hollywood. But at the time when I went, they had alternative nights where they would play, like, industrial, goth, and... Anyway, Little Bird had came out, and I just happened to dress like Annie Lennox from Sweet Dreams.
Just happened.
Just fell into it.
I rolled out of bed, and here I was.
I would go to goth clubs dressed like Annie Lennox with the suit, my red cropped hair. And
you had all that.
And I would do, like, the whole red band across the face, which she used to do all the time. And it came on, and at the very end of the dance floor, they had, like, this stage... And I went up on the stage, and I just kind of started lip-syncing to it, and this girl saw me, and she just basically grabbed me and pushed me to the front, and I lip-synced to Little Bird.
Iconic.
And the entire dance floor stopped and watched me. Like, I did my first and only drag show, and I killed it.
Wow.
And, you know, because I've been watching and listening to her for... God knows how many years. I know all her movements, her facial features, everything. Like, I pulled it off. I can't do it now because I'm
but
not...
But she does work her angles. Right?
She does, and...
She knows
in
where
that Savage
camera
video,
is.
She is working the fuck out of her angles.
Yeah, and, you know, her head movements, her body gestures, everything. I had it down to pat. And, you know, even though I'm a lot more gruff than I used to be, I still... challenge people. I will still Annie Lennox you. Out Annie Lennox you no matter what. But anyway.
Out Annie Lennox.
Yeah. Out Annie Lennox.
Out Lennox. Yeah. Out Lennox.
I will out
Little
Lennox
Bird is
you.
My favorite song.
Yeah.
I still think there is a play. There is still to this day a drag show going on and they're doing Little Bird.
Well,
I'm not kidding you.
Well, that's what was that video. That's, you know, again, that video was a bunch of drag queens doing all the stages of Annie Lennox.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of the stage was her pregnant, you know, with a top hat. So, you know, again, here she is.
Iconic.
Yeah. And
it's so anthematic. How do you say the word? It's like an anthem.
I don't know. Anthematic? I don't think that's a word.
Oh.
I don't...
Keep it in there.
I'm
also learning disabled.
I'm just thinking of, like, the lyrics of Little Bird, and it makes me think of you in L.A. at that time. Like, this little bird's coming out of her nest.
I was definitely a little bird.
This little bird's falling out of that nest now. I got a feeling like I'm a little less, so I've just got to put these wings to test.
Evangelino. I left here when I was 5, moved to Bermuda, and, you know, this is where I relate to Wonder Woman. I grew up in a tropical island and knew nothing of the outside world because we were 10 years behind, and I came into L.A. being a little bird and learning that L.A. has its great things and it also has its super shitty things, and, you know, learning that when you're in your early 20s is really hard.
She didn't tour with that album, right? Or did she?
No. What really sucks, you know, I never got to see her live. When I was in Massachusetts that one year, she did her tour in 1982 or 83. Somebody said, "Oh, I got you a ticket. It's front row at blah, blah, blah." I'm like, "Yes." And my parents were like, "You can't go. You're too young." They didn't let me go. So I missed all of their shows because of living in Bermuda. And, you know, they broke up and she did her solo, never did a show in L.A. And then they got back together and
for
they
peace.
Did. Yeah. Yeah. There was probably, and I don't even remember the name of the song, but there's one song on that album that I really liked, and I'm so sorry, Annie, but I really hated that album. And so they finally did a peace tour, and I was stoked. I mean, I got my suit on, and I would just do my whole androgyny thing, because when I was younger, I could pull it off. I can't do it now. I took a bus from Venice to Staples Center to go see them, and I was so freaking jazzed. I got a nosebleed seat, and they came out in camouflage cargo, and I was like, what the fuck? I was like, I want her to at least come out in this sparkling cocktail gown or something. I don't expect her to be all Eurythmics from 1982, but...
You had an image.
I had an image, and she came out in camouflage cargo, both of them. And then when they started doing all their, like, who's that girl in acoustic, I was like... Yeah.
My diva is letting me down. My diva is breaking my heart.
Talk about that, though, when your diva does let you down or break your heart. It's a big deal.
It really upset me. I was like, I've never seen them before. This is my first show with the Eurythmics. And, you know, I was like, okay, all right, they're not doing the stuff I would love to hear, but at least do their stuff in electronic. Because, you know, it was all electronic then. And to hear it on an acoustic guitar, who's that girl?
But there's just one thing. Just one thing. But there's just one thing. You really want to know. Who's that girl running around with you? Tell me.
That killed.
Yeah, I...
Was that the only time you've seen?
I saw that, and I left actually pretty sad. I was really disappointed. But a year later, she released Bear, which...
This was after Peace. We skipped Medusa, right?
So, no, she did Diva, and then she did Medusa, and I was not into it.
You worried? What about the... When her cover of Lighter Shade of Pale.
I was not into it.
It
felt weak to me. And then the Eurythmics did Peace, and then they did I've Got a Life, and I felt like they were reaching too hard for the Sweet Dreams era, because I don't like it when bands get together again and then they start referencing their old music just to kind of keep them what's the word?
Relevant.
Yeah. I didn't appreciate that. And then she did, you know, she did Medusa. I wasn't a big fan of it. And then she came out with Bear, and I actually really liked that album.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. hit. That clicked back.
Yeah, it kind of brought me back to Diva. And so she did a show at Royce Hall, and it redeemed Peace.
You saw it? You
yeah,
saw
the show. It was oh. so good. And what was great, was so cool, is she had an image projected on the screen from her first album, In the Garden, which I didn't know about until a friend of mine in Bermuda in 1985 told me about it, that their first album was In the Garden. I was like, what? It's not Sweet Dreams? Because everybody thinks Sweet Dreams is their first album, but their There's first album is In the Garden. Fabulous.
That album's so, good.
It's really mm-hmm. good.
It is good. I didn't know about it. I just started listening to it when I knew we were doing you. I was like, I've never heard of In the Garden. I've never even seen this album.
Uh-huh. What's your like favorite bop from In the Garden?
Oh, my God. Oh, I love Take Me to Your Heart.
Mm.
That's a great song. And then they have this song. It's like so random, called Caveman Head. It's very loud, guitar-y sounding, almost kind of punk sounding, but she sounds like a total dingbat. And it's actually about women trying to make it in the corporate world. You Whoa. Know, and it's like, you know, I have to be beautiful to make it. I have to look sexy. But I love that album because, you know, compared to Sweet Dreams and Touch, it's a lot simpler, and it didn't do as well. And
it didn't put them on the map, and then Sweet Dreams was like, this is the album that everyone
Right, and you know, their release from that album was Belinda, and it didn't do so well because it sounded terrible over the radios, through vinyl.
And like, then Bear came. Bear came 2003.
Yeah.
And you found her way back. She has that it is, she's like, has that like, crazy powder on her face. She's wearing a choker necklace.
With the big ass wig. Yeah. And she's sitting there completely naked with, you know, and that's one of the things about her. She's always loved photographing naked. She says, I'm comfortable with my body. Like the cover of Touch, the cover of Sweet Dreams.
Was that concert more intimate?
Well, Royce Hall is very intimate.
Yeah.
You know, it's a, you know, you can sit anywhere. It's small. The sound is great.
Did you love her selection?
Yes, because she did some stuff from the Eurythmics, but she also, I mean, she covered her solo. She covered Eurythmics. But her performance was great. And she was also very intimate in talking to people. That's what I love about venues like that, is because I feel like the artists are more in touch with the audience, as opposed to stadiums like Staples. I would never do another stadium again, because it's so disconnected. Mm. It's so impersonal. But when you're in a small place like that, you feel like you're in there with that person.
That's so cool. I would love to see Bette like that.
In like a theater. I mean, even in like a Broadway, like we got to see, Bette did Hello Dolly on Broadway last year, and we got to go. And to be in a theater like that, which is 1,100 seats, but like a Broadway house, so it's pretty tight.
Yep.
And you're so close. I've never been that close. You know, you really feel like.
Yeah.
Versus like, you see her something like Madison Square Garden. It's not the same thing.
It's not. And even though at the Royce Hall with Annie Lennox, I was on the balcony. It just felt like feet away from her. It was
That's incredible.
Awesome. Yeah. Emptiness. I listened to the samples and I felt the same way that I did about Medusa.
Yeah. I kind of thought maybe you were going to be into the next album.
Are you the same with Nostalgia too?
I actually liked Nostalgia because I felt like she was in more touch with herself because she's always been into blues and jazz, You know, go back to Be Yourself Tonight. It's very bluesy. She's always been about soul. And that's one of the reasons why I love her. Even in her earlier stuff, even though it's electronic, you can still feel her soul. Like the song Aqua, you felt that soul coming from her voice.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's a very sultry soul. And, you know, I mean, she sang with Aretha Franklin for crying out loud.
Under Pressure.
No,
we're talking about
Girls Are Doing It for Themselves. Hello.
Oh no, but we were talking about souls, but
that was with David Bowie.
Yeah.
And she also performed with Stevie Wonder. You know, There Must Be an Angel. He played the harmonica for that.
Mm-hmm. And also, just while we're on Nostalgia, that fucking Grammys performance when she blows Hozier out of the fucking water.
You know what was...
I was like, this should be an Annie Lennox song, please.
You know what was funny?
Take me to church, Annie.
It was incredible. It was great. But it was funny. I was reading reviews on that, and people were like, what's up with the face movement that she's doing? I'm like, bitch, you don't know Annie Lennox. Because she's been doing that since 1981.
She was also giving me lots of robotic. Yes, like, let me robotically use my microphone.
Exactly. When I saw that, I was like, fuck yeah. And I'm stomping. Like, that is freaking old school Annie Lennox. She's bringing it. Annie Lennox! Put a spell on you. You know, that's totally Annie Lennox. I mean, I know that song has been overdone, but...
Yeah, but she actually really... And that was kind of... That was a single. I was like, that's a hit. Like,
yeah.
They're gonna... Annie really owns this song in a way, because it is overdone, and I remember being like, oh, Annie Lennox, why are you doing this? And then you hear it, and it's like, man, this is like a true classic.
Yeah.
Like,
but for a covers album, too, it's very cohesive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just sonically cohesive.
With her style.
Yeah. With her style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with her style. So you brought up the, David and David Bowie Annie duet.
Pressure.
Yeah, it was for the Freddie Mercury tribute. And she's always been compared to David Bowie and... you know, even before that happened, I was like, it'd be so cool to see her and David Bowie do a duet, and she did. Well, you know, she has B-sides, too, and I've been searching far and wide for B-sides, and they're really hard to find until YouTube. And I found every single one of her B-sides, and I YouTubed it to MP3, so I have all of her B-sides. But one of them was she did a cover of Fame by David Bowie.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a little cheesy, but it's still cool, the fact that Annie Lennox did a David Bowie cover, and I can die happy.
You know what I just found out? You know the Whitney Houston song Step by Step?
Okay.
That's hers.
It's from the B-side of Diva.
That she was only released in Japan.
Are you step serious?
Step by step. Yeah, that's Annie Lennox. Annie Lennox wrote that song, and it was only released in Japan.
But that...
Isn't that wild?
Everyone listening, that just singing, that was actually Jason Black.
Oh, yes.
It sounded like Annie Lennox. It was Jason.
No, I wasn't trying to sound like Annie Lennox. They thought it was Whitney.
They
thought it was Whitney. Sweetie.
Those two impersonations you do.
No one else does, though. Like, it's very clear. That was my Whitney. But isn't that wild?
So Annie Lennox wrote that song?
And performed it and cut it. And then it was only released in Japan for Diva.
Step by step, day by day, my, 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 ooh, now don't you slip away, don't you go too far, 'cause when I close my eyes, I know. Makes me hold my breath, just like the silent water upon the ocean's depths. Don't you slip away, don't you go too far, 'cause when I close my eyes, I know.
Somehow Whitney got a hold of it and then put it on the preacher's wife.
And made a bunch of money for Annie.
Yeah, that was like the dance set for Whitney.
Wow. Yeah.
I know, wild, right?
God.
Do you have any other Annie bops you want to play before we ask you what question you know is coming?
It's Mystery of Love. It's from the soundtrack to 1984, which is highly unrated. It was a whole mess. They hired the Eurythmics to do the soundtrack for 1984, but they were about to scrap it, and Dave Stewart and I said, no, we worked on this album, it's going to happen. There's actually two versions to it. There's the studio recording that they basically made them do so it could be more pop relevant, and then there's also the actual soundtrack version of it, which is a lot more darker and a lot more dismal, which personally I love. But one of the reasons why I love this song is because this was, again, when I was really getting into kind of like this whole tribal sounding music, and you know, it's there's no lyrics, but it's percussion and chants, and it's freaking insane. It's a great song.
I got you. Let's play this.
It's one of my favorite. I watched an interview with her, and she said, you know, I think I'm gonna quit singing because I'm too happy now.
Ooh.
And, you know, in my head I was like, that's the most honest and real thing anybody can say, because a lot of musicians, good musicians, a lot of good musicians sing because they're sad or unhappy or there's some kind of something going on that's just making them write this music, and I think that sadness or that anger or whatever it is what helps create this art. And one of the things that I've noticed throughout her later years, I felt like it just kind of felt a little weaker, it felt a little too generic, and I think it's because she's married, she has kids, and she's, you know, she's an activist doing wonderful things for the world, and I think that's great, and I think she should keep doing that, you know. I mean, she's been on the, you know, alongside with Nelson Mandela, and, you know, finding cure for AIDS in Africa. She's a strong feminist, you know. I mean, she's always been a very powerful feminist ever since the beginning of Sweet Dreams, and she's made that very freaking clear. I mean, there was even a point in her career where, you know, she came out as a strong feminist and called out other musicians about being feminist. It's like, you know, going on stage and being sexy and showing your tits is not feminism. It's all about your grassroots and, you know, supporting other women, not being sexy on stage. And, you know, Annie Lennox has never been about being sexy on stage. She's all about empowering and being strong and being a voice for women, for the human race, for the most part. And I think she's done all that, and she's kind of reached her point where, you know, I've said my voice in music, but now I'm going to say my voice in another means, and that's by being an activist and being a strong person for, you know, women, you know, HIV victims, you know, apartheid, you know, whatever. She's always been an activist, but now so much more now. And
it's so powerful to know, you know, when it's maybe time to not do the thing and to do something
sometimes
else.
Sometimes not doing can be just as powerful.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, one of the questions that you sent to me is like, what would the next role that you would give her? I'd say I can't give her a role because she's done it. She's acted, she's a musician, she's an activist, she's a voice. You know, I mean, she's even wore t-shirts that, you know, that say, you know, HIV positive. You know, she's not HIV positive, but she's speaking for the people that are HIV mm-hmm. positive. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, she's done it all, and she still has... that woman's going to keep rocking for many more years, and...
Oh, yes.
You know, and... You know, I'm so happy that I have her in my life as a musician, a role model, and a very positive role model. Because when I was younger, she she brought out my darker side, but now she's like a lighter side now. Because now I'm not as angry as I used to be, and you know, I'm still really bitchy, and you know, I tell people don't let my mother's side come out, but you know, it's great to see a woman that evolved from very cynical but strong and I'm not gonna take shit from you to a woman that's I'm here to help you,
right?
You know,
I was gonna ask you the question, but I feel like you answered it. Mm-hmm. What would you say to anything? You just did that. That's so beautiful. It's thank so you gorgeous. So much for coming on to this podcast.
Yes, and thank honoring you so much Annie.
Yes. I know it's inspired me. Like, I'm seriously going to, like, I feel like we're going to have a summer of, like, my goth bad bitches.
But thanks, everyone, for listening. Download the episodes.
You can like, subscribe. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're listen on Instagram.
To the old episodes. If you're just an Annie Lennox goth kid coming here, go and listen about Liza Minnelli. You'll love Liza. She's goth kind of in her own Broadway way.
Yeah, sure.
We've got back episodes about Kate Bush and... Barbara Streisand.
And if you like someone, go deep. This is what you're listening to. Like, you were inspired to, like, go deep into
go deep or
the
go
things
home.
You love. Or
you
go,
listen
go,
to
go
an
home,
hour
here.
About Annie Lennox. Go listen to an hour about Susie Sue. Come on.
Okay. All right,
thanks
babies.
For listening, babies.
Bye. Bye, bye. Battle Angel.
Sweetheart, the sun has set. All red and primitive above our heads. Blood stained on an ageless sky. Wipe your tears and let the salt stains dry. Let them all. Where all our prayers are said, whispered silence.